Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. I am thrilled to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week a good friend and a wonderful leader of the peace movement, Anne Wright. Anne did 13 years, unfortunately, in the U.S. Army and 16 in the Army Reserves, retired as a colonel. In 1987, she joined the U.S. Foreign Service. She was a deputy ambassador in Sierra Leone and Micronesia and Afghanistan and Mongolia, won a heroism prize from the State Department, served in countless countries, and she quit in protest when the United States invaded Iraq in 2003, on that day, since which point Anne Wright has been a leader of the peace movement, impossible to keep track of, raising hell in Congress, going on boats to Gaza, organizing Camp Casey in Crawford, and she is also the co-author of a terrific book about whistleblowers in the U.S. government called Dissent, Voices of Conscience, and not just the U.S. government, but governments around the world that take part in U.S. wars. It is an honor to welcome Anne Wright to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you, David. It is an honor to be on Talk Nation Radio and get to have a chance to chat with you and all of the things that you do for peace and justice in this world.
It is a shame that you have not been on here sooner, but you are impossible to keep track of, and there's more topics to hit on than we will possibly have time for. But I did want to talk a little bit about Chelsea Manning and your experience with these recent whistleblowers.
Yes, I just got back from London, and we were able to present in absentia an award, the Sam Adams Award for Truth-Telling, to Chelsea Manning at the Oxford University, Oxford Union Debating Hall, you know, one of the great prestigious old halls of the world for knowledge. And we presented the Sam Adams Award to a high school friend of Chelsea's who had come in specifically for that and to read Chelsea's statement. And, you know, Chelsea is in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, in prison, was facing a potentially 35 years in prison. And the statements, though, that Chelsea is writing about the need for citizens to be vigilant about their government are so powerful. And we were very honored to give her that award this year. Earlier in the year, a delegation from Sam Adams had gone to Moscow to give an award to Ed Snowden. Ray McGovern, Colleen Rowley, FBI whistleblower, Jesslyn Radack, Department of Justice whistleblower, and Tom Drake, NSA whistleblower, flew to Moscow and gave Ed that award. And, of course, Ed being there and being supported internationally by groups such as WikiLeaks, that we were able to go by the Ecuadorian embassy in London and have dinner with Julian Assange. And that was quite a moving time, too. He, too, being in a prison environment in a way. I mean, at least it's in an embassy, but it's still his freedom of movement has been curtailed by the United States and by Great Britain.
And it was also terrific for Ed Snowden to have recorded a video statement in support of that award for Chelsea Manning. I thought that was wonderful for one whistleblower to be supportive of another.
Well, it certainly is. And the band of whistleblowers that we have, and particularly those of that have drawn international attention and who have faced or are facing monumental curtailments of their liberties, it is a band that is a very close network, even though they may be geographically distant, certainly in spirit, they're very close. And for us who are not confined, who have the ability to travel, who have the ability to represent them, it's so important that we do that to make sure the world doesn't forget them.
It's impossible to keep track of all of the countries where these whistleblowers have exposed U.S. wrongdoing and where the United States government is causing trouble right now, from Venezuela to Ukraine to Afghanistan to Somalia to Pakistan to Yemen and Iran. But one of the hottest spots, it seems, for U.S. aggression at the moment and for aggression by others is in Syria. And you were recently part of an effort to try to ameliorate that situation?
Yes, I was part of a delegation led by Code Pink to go to Geneva to support women at the peace table for the Syrian negotiations back in mid-January. You know, most peace negotiations are between the guys with the guns. Well, and it leaves out half of the population, the women. Even though there may be a woman that is a nominal participant on one side or the other, but really the voices of women are never heard at the peace table. And so we decided we wanted to help Syrian women's voices be heard. And we were able to help with a conference back in December where 50 Syrian women from both sides, from all sides, were able to get out of Syria and come to Geneva and have a conference themselves and then pick 10 delegates who would then be the women's delegation. Well, trying to get that women's delegation at the peace table, that was our goal, but the fallback position was as observer status for that 10-woman group. You know, sometimes we don't succeed, and we didn't at that particular time, but it was very, very useful to highlight to the 16 nations that were sponsoring that conference, you know, that there is a movement that women have to be at the peace table. And we were able to get the women's delegation around to have individual meetings with many of the 16 countries that were sponsoring that. But it's, you know, the fact that the guys with the guns are the ones that negotiate the peace agreements or the ending of the conflict to their best advantage, which seldom ever is to the advantage of women and children.
This issue of women being excluded from peace negotiations is obviously a crucial one that I hope you will continue to work on. On the other hand, it's going to be a very interesting discussion of women and war in the coming years as we see a woman run for president of the United States, who our friend Ray McGovern, who you just mentioned, went with you to Russia, has filed a suit against Ms. Clinton. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes. We remember well the day that Ray got roughed up at, I think it was Georgetown University, when he merely turned his back to Hillary Clinton after she was droning on, so to speak, with all of her very aggressive statements of what America ought to be doing in terms of our national defense being based totally on our ability to kill other people. So Ray just stood up with his back toward Clinton, and it just happened to be right at the moment that she started talking about the authoritarian governments of other countries and their bad treatment of protest and dissent, when all of a sudden the State Department military diplomatic security came down and just hauled Ray out as if he were in one of these, well, I guess he is in one of these authoritarian governments, hauled him out and really pushed him around, caused great bruising of his arms, and he's filed a lawsuit against diplomatic security for being roughed up. And as it turns out, as a part of the filing of that lawsuit, we've now discovered that there's another watch list, one that I, as a State Department employee, I've never heard of it, and yet it's a State Department list called the BOLO list, B-O-L-O, Be on the Lookout For, And now Ray McGovern is on that list, and it identifies people who may be challenging U.S. government policy. So it's quite outrageous that just standing up and putting your back towards someone will get you beaten up by our own security forces.
And put on a dangerous watch list for opposing violence and wars. There's another aspect to women and war that you've really been leading the charge on in recent years, and that is going after the problem, the epidemic of rape and sexual assault in the U.S. military. And it seems there may be a little progress coming in that regard.
Well, at long last, we have gotten the attention of the U.S. Congress on these issues, and some specific congresswomen and a couple of congressmen have really been helpful in shaming the leadership of the military services and the Secretary of Defense on what's going on. And I will mention that one of the real leaders in this now is a group called Service Women's Action Network, who have really, really been very professional on how they go about working with individual congressional offices to get legislation and hearings And finally, after a decade of trying to get movement on this, I think it's really shaking the senior leadership of the military up. That said, it is not reducing the numbers of these horrible criminal acts that are occurring. The word is still out that you can rape in the military, and you probably are not even going to get prosecuted for it. So until that environment changes, we will not give up pushing hard on this.
There have been competing claims and debate over how prevalent this is. What do you think are the most accurate statistics in terms of probability of being raped or assaulted if you go into the U.S. military as a female?
Well, the statistics vary from 1 in 3 to 1 in 4. So it doesn't matter which one you use, it's horrible. When you think that every third woman that joins the military or every fourth woman that joins the military will be raped in that short period of time that she's in the military, 4 to 6 years. The statistics on sexual assault and rape in our entire civilian society is not good. I mean, that's 1 in 3 women in the course of their lifetimes will be raped or sexually assaulted. But here we have a period of 4 to 6 years that women in that group will be sexually assaulted, 1 in 3 or 1 in 4. And the other part of it is that guys ought to be aware of the reported incidents of rape and sexual assault in the military over the last 5 years, 10% of those being reported are reported by males, by men. And it's not homosexual rape or anything like that. It is the classic rape of power, somebody in a position of power using that power over somebody subordinate to them. And I think the incident of rape of males in the military is probably as epidemic as female. It's just that guys are much more fearful, embarrassed of acknowledging what happened to them.
Really? You think it's 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 men as well?
I wouldn't doubt it at all, because if you know that 10% of those that are coming forward to saying that they've been sexually assaulted are guys, that really is the tip of the iceberg for the guys.
Wow, and no doubt there are some women who don't report incidents as well.
Well, for sure, and the fact that there are very few prosecutions of perpetrators, and that the victim, the person that's claiming that they've had this criminal act committed on them, becomes a double victim, that the military itself and the commanders, many cases will not prosecute the cases because there are members of the chain of command that are involved in it. And it's the old boys network raising its ugly head that people in positions of power won't prosecute other people in positions of power. So it's a very nasty situation, but at least we're getting some light shined on it, and hopefully over time and with more prosecutions. That's what's got to happen. We've got to prosecute people, and we really need to take the issue of determination of prosecution out of the chain of command and put it into an independent avenue within the military, because we know the chain of command protects itself.
The U.S. military claims to be in 175 countries. I think it may be more than that. But we hear about ongoing epidemics of rape by U.S. soldiers of local people in these communities, perhaps more in Okinawa and other areas in Asia than anywhere else. That's where the U.S. military, among other places, is seriously expanding, including in Jeju Island in South Korea, where I think you've been recently. What's your view of this so-called pivot toward Asia?
Well, I was in Asia and the Pacific in November. I had a three-week speaking tour there. I was invited first to speak in Japan for the Article 9 conference they have. You know, Article 9 is their no war article of their constitution, where for 65 years the Japanese people have not been subjected to the wars of choice that America has been involved in. They've been outside those, and the people of Japan like that. They don't want to be a warmongering country anymore. However, both the Bush administration and the Obama administration have been pushing the Japanese government, and particularly the administrations of Abe, to renounce that article and to become a major military force in Asia. And because America needs help. America can't finance totally all of its wars, and it wants somebody else to carry the load. But the people of Japan are saying, forget that. We've seen what happens when the military option is the one that's used by our country. So there's a big debate going on in Japan now. I was in South Korea on Jeju Island, the place where the U.S. has pushed the South Korean government to build another military base. It's like South Korea, like Japan, needs another military base. It's littered with them. But on this little pristine island, 100 miles south of the mainland of South Korea, the South Korean government has built a naval base to house Aegis missile destroyers. The Aegis missile system is a part of the U.S. missile defense system. And they've done it in an area that is a pristine area. It's a very beautiful area, and now it's torn up. It's destroyed by yet another military base. However, the people of Jeju Island continue to protest against the building of that naval base. And one of the things that they talk about is the fact that local women and girls are the victims of sexual assault of military. And the fact that so many women in another island, Okinawa, in the southern part of Japan, the Ryukyu Islands, where the rape of women in Okinawa has substantially altered U.S. foreign policy and military policy in the area, where 30 to 50,000 people will be on the streets when another one of these terrible incidents of the U.S. military personnel raping a young Okinawan girl or woman. And the United States military has already acknowledged they are now being forced to remove at least 20,000 Marines from Okinawa by the year 2025. But in order to do that, they are now saying they need to construct a new military base on Okinawa to relieve the pressure in a populated area where we have a military base. They want to build another military base with runways out in the South China Sea over coral areas and homes to endangered marine mammals, the one called the dugong, which is like a manatee. And the United States is now going to build runways out in the pristine ocean so that we can continue our military expansion in Asia.
And you've been to countries around the world and speaking with groups that are resisting U.S. and other militarism. Is there any doubt as to whether this empire of bases is making us safer or making us more hated and resented?
Well, I think that certainly when you create even more bases around the world, that people in those countries, they don't want them. And we have two new bases now in, for God's sakes, Australia. The U.S. is building a drone base on the Cocos Islands, and we already have 600 Marines that are on temporary duty at Darwin, and they will be joined by another 1,400, so that the United States will have a permanent basing of U.S. Marines, of 2,000 of them, in Australia. And the Australian peace groups and social justice groups are already raising Cain with their government because they know what's going to happen there in terms of U.S. military raping of local women and girls. If you look at the Philippines, where the United States has not had a base in almost 20 years, and yet now we are conducting military exercises and there are temporary movements of large numbers of U.S. military into the Philippines. So the expansion is really, it's destabilizing the area. When you go to the area and you see the headlines in Korea, you see the headlines in Japan and in China, all three of those countries talking about the tensions in the area. And granted, there are some tensions, but the U.S., after now the U.S. has successfully destroyed the Middle East, at least the countries of Iraq and Afghanistan, now it's time to move on to other destruction in other parts of the world. And and the U.S. continually prodding and poking and aggressive statements toward China, toward North Korea. And granted, there are security concerns, but you don't resolve them by increasing tension. And particularly on China, which really holds us, I cannot imagine why Washington thinks it is good that you just continue to poke at people who own our national debt, who make the clothes that we are in, who make our cell phones, our computers, China is keeping America afloat with manufacturing, and why we are after them in the way that we are makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I think this is what people have to understand. It doesn't just destroy our government and our environment and our bank accounts, but it's counterproductive. It makes us resented. And some of the people who have come to best understand what the U.S. military is doing around the world are, of course, members of the U.S. military. And you are currently, Ann Wright, on a tour of the West Coast of the United States, going to GI coffee houses. Tell us about this.
Yes, well, there is another tour that's going on besides my little tour of San Francisco, Sacramento, Berkeley, Santa Rosa. There's another group, representatives of the three GI coffee houses that we have around the world. Most people know about the coffee house at Fort Hood, Texas, under the hood, and the one that we have up at Fort Lewis called Coffee Strong. But many people may not realize that for the last 4 years, there's been a GI coffee house in Kaiserslautern, Germany. And one of the people that runs that, a woman named Micah Kapp Schubert, has come over, and we have representatives from Under the Hood and Coffee Strong who are on a West Coast tour to remind people in the peace and social justice movements that these three coffee houses are there and that they need help, they need support. And it was really great. We met with them last night. About 120 people were at a venue where we heard presentations from each one of the coffee houses about what they're doing. You know, the outreach is really interesting. It's not the outreach necessarily on the issue of war, but it because that's a big first step to try to get an active duty military person to engage you on that. But it's much easier when you engage them on their treatment within the military. And once you reach them on that level, then you're able to talk to them about the ultimate reality, which they have actually seen. I mean, they have seen the results of war on themselves, much less on all the people that the United States has invaded and occupied and killed. So it's really important that we remember these three groups that are in some of the largest military concentrations that we have in the United States, and then in Germany, that there are people out there working day in and day out to try to make sure the people that are in the military know that there are those of us outside who are willing to help them if they decide to get out, and to actually support them in terms of proper treatment while they're in there. And then at the same time, of course, talking to them about the very important issues of stopping the militarism that we have in our country.
Yeah, I've been to Under the Hood down in Texas, or at least to an event that they put on, and heard from people who testified they'd been saved from suicide by being able to have someone to talk to about issues within the military. But this sort of two-part process that we've been hearing about for years of get the soldiers talking about being deployed while psychologically suffering or physically suffering, about treatment within the military, and then stage two, get them interested in resisting war. How to what extent have active duty members been brought to that second step by this process through these coffee houses?
Well, in hearing the stories last night from all three of the representatives, I would say it's been in the low thousands of people who have actually really had a major change of mind that they know about. I mean, it's hard to tell. You know, a lot of people that are in the military and that are suffering from PTSD even though they may at one stage reach out to one of these GI coffee houses, it may not be that they follow up on it. But I know that they are affected by what they've seen and what they've heard. And just as we have many veterans that really isolate themselves when they come out of the military, on one level, those that are still in the military may be psychologically isolating themselves too. So the main point, I think, of all of this is that no matter how, these institutions are very important. And if we didn't have them, there would be no way to reach really active duty people. Having them gives us at least that opportunity. So it's hard to calculate quantitatively how successful they are. But as you mentioned, the people that come back to say, you know, I would have committed suicide if I hadn't had somebody like you guys to help me get through this. Those we know are in the South to have said that.
Wow. Tell people the names of the three coffee houses again in case they want to send some support their way.
Yes. The one that's up at Fort Lewis, Washington is called Coffee Strong, and that would be coffeestrong.org. The one at Fort Hood, Texas is called Under the Hood, and it is underthehood.org. And the one in Kaiserslautern, Germany is called The Clearing Barrel, B-A-R-R-E-L-L. That's kind of like a military term of the barrel of a rifle, The Clearing Barrel. And it, too, is clearingbarrel.org.
And Anne Wright, your book is Dissent, Voices of Conscience, Government Insiders Speak Out Against the War in Iraq. Everyone should get a copy of that. And where are you on tour, and where will you be next, and how can people keep up with you?
Oh, thanks. Well, they can keep up with me through the schedule that I keep on our website, which is voicesofconscience.org. And I'll be here in the Bay Area for the next 7 days, speaking in Beale Air Base, outside of Beale Air Base, on drone issues, and then in Marysville, California, which is right near Beale, then in Sacramento, then in Green Valley, then in Sebastopol and Santa Rosa, and then ending on March 2nd in Berkeley, at the Unitarian Church in Berkeley, and then on March the 2nd, on that Sunday night, I hop on a plane from San Francisco to Cairo, and I'll be in Cairo and hopefully in Gaza as a part of a 100-person women's delegation going into Gaza for International Women's Day. So we'll have a good report back from conditions in Cairo, and then hopefully they'll let us into Gaza so we can be there with solidarity with the people of Gaza.
Wonderful. We will be looking forward to reports from your travels in Gaza in particular. Anne Wright, thank you very, very, very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
It's been my pleasure, David. Keep up the great work.
You too.
Thank you.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.